son Eli, whose eyesight had begun to grow dim so that he could not see, was lying down in his room. The Lamb of God had not yet gone out, and Samuel was lying down in the temple of the Lord, where the ark of God was. Then the Lord called, "Samuel, Samuel," and he said, "Here I am," and ran to Eli, and said, "Here I am, for you called me." But Eli said, "I did not call, lie down again." So he went and lay down. The Lord called again, "Samuel." Samuel got up and went to Eli, and said, "Here I am, for you called me." But he said, "I did not call, my son, lie down again." Now Samuel did not yet know the Lord, and the word of the Lord had not yet been revealed to him. The Lord called Samuel a third time, and he got up and went to Eli, and said, "Here I am, for you called me." Then Eli perceived that the Lord was calling the boy. Therefore Eli said to Samuel, "Go, lie down, and if he calls you, you shall say, 'Speak, Lord, for your servant is listening.'" So Samuel went and lay down in his place. Now the Lord came and stood there, calling as before, "Samuel, Samuel." And Samuel said, "Speak, for your servant is listening." Then the Lord said to Samuel, "See, I am about to do something in Israel that will make both ears of anyone who hears of it tingle. On that day I will fulfill against Eli all that I have spoken concerning his house, from beginning to end, for I have told them that I am about to punish his house forever for the iniquity that he knew, because his sons were blaspheming God, and he did not restrain them. Therefore, I swear to the house of Eli that the iniquity of Eli's house shall not be expiated by sacrifice or offering forever." Samuel lay there until morning. Then he opened the doors of the house of the Lord. Samuel was afraid to tell Eli of the vision. But Eli called Samuel and said, "Samuel, my son." He said, "Here I am." Eli said, "What was it that he told you? Do not hide it from me. May God do so to you and more so if you hide anything from me of all that he told you." So Samuel told him everything and hid nothing from him. Then he said, "It is the Lord. Let him do what seems good to him." As Samuel grew up, the Lord was with him and let none of his words fall to the ground. And all of Israel, from Dan to Beersheba, knew that Samuel was a trustworthy prophet of the Lord. Lord, thank you, God.
You know, this time of year is a time of year when many, many decisions are being made in the lives of people, young and old. For those who are most recent graduates from high school or college, they are beginning to debate and wonder, maybe even accept a new place to go and study some more. Trying to make that important choice of what might be the best place to go for them that might further what God wants to use them for in the future. For those who are out looking for a new job, they're wondering what kind of opportunity might be available to me at this time that I can use my gifts to their fullest. And in that, where might that new job take me? Because sometimes jobs take us out of where we are, not only out of the comfortableness of what we're familiar, but maybe out of the very territory in which we live. And some are deciding, if I accept this position, then I need to move somewhere else. The decision of where to move and when to move also involves all kinds of decisions and choices that all have lasting consequences. Every decision has some kind of consequence, sometimes good, sometimes bad, but we know that when we choose one thing, we choose not something else. It's a way in which we choose a course in our life in which river to travel, and it may lead different places, and the joys and the perils along the way may be very, very different. Some very unexpected. It is only after we choose a course, make a decision, that we discover the nature and the quality and the rightness or wrongness of that choice. In this passage today in the Old Testament, there's that whole sense of choices to be made. And the story that follows when Samuel gets older is, after he has ruled for a while in his role as a judge, giving wise counsel, they come to him and ask him that they want to have a king. They don't want judges anymore. They want a king. They want a king like every other nation has a king. We want to be like our neighbors. They have one. Why can't we have one? Have you ever heard that before? It seems human nature to look out upon our own situation and think, you know, I think they're better off. We should choose what they have. Grass is always greener, really. It's an interesting notion in the life of things for us to make those kind of choices. Now, Samuel was a little bit upset. Not unlike Tessa. Upset with some of the choices we have to make, whether to stay or to go. In this particular case, Samuel is struggling because at this point they had so trusted his counsel. But now they're basically asking for a king to replace his counsel and to lead them. And with that choice, there'd be certain consequences that lie ahead, certainly unknown. And at first he took offense to them somehow rejecting him, but God reminded them, they're not rejecting you, they're rejecting me, because I am their king. But they don't want to recognize it. They don't want to follow it. They want to follow something else they think is better. So all I ask you to do is to kind of warn them of the pitfalls, the pluses and minuses that may take place if they choose to have a king lead and rule them. And so they insisted. They insisted they wanted a king. That was their choice. And so that's who they had Samuel help them call. You know, call is common in a variety of forms. When I was growing up, my father was a Methodist pastor, and so it was not so much he who chose where he was going. It was the bishop and district superintendent who would choose. And at the annual conference, which took place about this time of year, they would decide who was going to go where on moving day. And on moving day, literally, everyone packed out in the morning and arrived at their new place in the afternoon, and the next Sunday, they began at a new location. Now, someone envied that opportunity. For me, having lived that opportunity, I can tell you it's not all what it's cracked up to be. The question we asked as three sons who all played sports was, when he come home, are we going to play baseball here, or are we going to have to try out for a new team? Because we knew the decisions made by others were going to impact us and our life. And that concerned us. Now, in our tradition, we have a different sense of call. Decision-making involves the church and pastor both looking for where God might want them next and hoping to discover one another and come to some understanding of how they might travel together for a time. And those decisions and choices do change things. I remember when I felt called to ministry to decide where to go to seminary, and I decided, living in Wisconsin, I was not going to go to Chicago, with all the choices there. I decided to go to New Jersey. Well, if I hadn't chosen to go to New Jersey, I would not have met a friend in the school who directed me to a school in Virginia, the Restoring School of Christian Education, for which after seminary I went there to get a master's in Christian Ed. And there I met this woman who's now my wife. And yesterday we just celebrated our 34th wedding anniversary. Now, if we had not met and gotten married, then we would not have had Aaron and Nicole. And so again, decisions impact decisions and impact us in all kinds of ways, yet we're not sure what that might fully look like or what it may lead to. So when one chooses and makes a choice, one needs to be thoughtful, deliberate, and careful, don't we? And you want to hopefully choose wisely. When I think of the Samuel story, I think of Samuel reluctantly telling them and reminding them that, well, you know, you look for two things when we came. You look for somebody to protect and somebody to provide. The provision is the sense in which they will provide you an opportunity to live safely and also provide you with food necessary for your daily subsistence, right? But also they were to provide protection, so if someone else tried to come and conquer you, they could gather forces inside the fort and protect you from them. Provision and protection were two of the qualities of kingship. But then there were some other things about kingship that they probably didn't quite pick up. One is that in order for you to plant the seeds and care for the garden and harvest the food and prepare the food to eat, it took some of them to have to do the work to make that possible. Some had to be gardeners and cooks. Others, if you wanted protection, they needed to offer up their life to maybe protect others, to serve in that military, to help in that protection. And then, of course, of almost any king anywhere, one's going to get levy taxes. There's going to be some price to pay for this provision and protection. It is amazing, isn't it? It seemed like such a simple thing to have what everybody else had, to have a leader, someone we can count on who's going to provide for us and all these important things. Not too uncommon for other kinds of leadership we look outside the church, hoping they'll provide what we need to make our life easier, assuming that they might have demands of us. Requirements. They may choose things we don't want to choose, and then impacts our lives. Choosing is a difficult thing, and one wants to choose wisely. Which reminds me of this incredible movie series, Indiana Jones. We're in the very last of the trilogy, The Last Crusade. Indiana and his father decide that they want to go after the quest for the Holy Grail, the cup that the Lord used at the Last Supper, that because the legend had it that if you were to drink water from it, it would give you everlasting life. Now, they didn't want it so much for themselves, but they knew there was a villain, there's always a villain, who wanted it for his own purposes, so that he might live forever. And so the battle and the chase goes on, and they go through all kinds of adventures until finally they arrive at the place where it might very well be. But it seems that before Indiana and his father shows up, they're having difficulty getting through the three tests that gets you into the place where the cups are. And so they decide after a few failed attempts to use Indiana and to get Indiana to agree, the villain shoots his father in the stomach. And as he lies dying, now Indiana is encouraged to go do those things that need to be done to make it to that sacred place. And so he passed the test. He gets inside this cave, and he notices there's a knight there. And the knight's rather old, been there 100 or so years. And he sees the table, all kinds of chalices, all kinds of cups. But the villain comes in following after his good work and decides to command the attention of the day. He goes and looks at all the cups, and the knight tells him, you can pick. And so he picks the most ornate one. Obviously, a king would have an ornate cup. Chooses that, goes to the place with the well, drinks in the water. It seems going pretty well for the moment. But then all of a sudden, it turns on him. It begins to take life away from him. He dries up like dust and blows away. And the knight's famous line is, he chose poorly. At this point, Indiana decides he needs to pick better. And so he looks and picks something maybe a carpenter might drink out of, something much more simple. Takes a chance, dips it in, takes the sip, survives it, takes it to his father. His father comes back fully to life. Knight obviously can say to him, you chose wisely. Choices. Every choice involves consequence. Every choice isn't known where it's going to lead until you live with it for a while and you see the pluses and minuses of it. And sometimes there's not one only choice to make. There are a variety of choices one could make, equally good choices, but each of them have their unique path, their unique realities. And sometimes you just have to choose. as thoughtfully, as deliberately as you can, you choose and hope that you've chosen wisely. A few months ago, this church, unfortunate circumstances, chose to look for an interim and chose to call me as that interim. Now you can determine as the course of time happens whether that was a good choice or not. But the fact is, at some point you made that choice and took some sense of risk in making that choice. And then some asked me, well, why did you come? And I said, well, I came because I felt called by God to come to you in a difficult circumstance for a time. And now I feel called to leave, to resume that which I enjoyed in retirement, the pursuits that God has for me to do. Finished a couple books. I've been in the process of writing for 5 years. And can't ever seem to finish when you're working full time. Consulting work for churches, providing resources for them, for which now I don't have the freedom. A chance to support my wife as she cares for her aging mother and for us to be able to tend to our daughters who are facing decisions and choices to move and change their realities. And so we make a choice. Your pastor nominating committee has been selected, has been trained, and is now in the process of going through a process, a deliberate, thoughtful, prayerful process, which will lead for them eventually to share with you their recommendations, who they think God wishes to be with you in the time to come. In the meantime, Captain Redman, a very experienced, mature pastor, is coming to be an interim with you until that day arrives. But in that search process, the PNC has to reflect carefully. And there's not just one person out there. Only one person to serve you next. Any more than there's just one person that you need to marry in your life and there are no other choices. I know for a fact that's not true. I know many people who've married again and had an incredible life together, as incredible as the first one they had. So there are choices. And it's difficult. And nothing said, and nothing said. And it's a bit of a step of faith, as Indiana Jones learned. One has to step out with your best efforts. Now, as the PNC goes about the careful process of the search process, then you as congregation need to be prayerfully keeping them in mind as you share your notions, as they ask you what qualities you look for and what things you think that the congregation needs to be doing in the future, God's calling you to do. But also pray for them, that God's Spirit may be with them as they attempt to discern. And then to ready your hearts, as their hearts, and some pastor's hearts, to receive them and offer them up and to choose to travel for a time. It's a call process in our tradition. It's a very interesting one. Michael Ward came to be with you, and Michael Ward was called to leave you. Pete Jones came to serve you, and Pete Jones felt called to leave you and go somewhere else. Michael came to be with you, and unfortunately did not get a chance to fulfill his call. Someone else is going to come as well. And who might that be? I don't know. I do know that God knows, and I do know that if you deliberately, thoughtfully, and prayerfully go about it, you can discern, but it's going to be a choice, and you want to choose wisely and carefully. And learn what the Israelites learned so long ago in choosing kings, that the one who's really king, the one who's most trustworthy, the one who can really provide and protect, is the Lord and the Lord alone. We're all dependent upon the Lord, and so you still are. But you're in good hands. Incredible hands. Ones that have served you in the past and will serve you in the future. And you can boldness and confidence approach tomorrow with open hands looking at the opportunities. What wonderment God has for your next choice. I'm not sure of all the choices you're facing in your life right now, but what decisions you may choose to make in the future. But be well assured that what God is inviting and encouraging you to do is to be deliberate, thoughtful, and prayerful. And to choose wisely.